Welcome to part two, how to create ritual. In part one of this two-part series, I talked about the reasons to have a ritual, about what rituals are and why I consider them so important. Here in part two, I want to talk about actually having a ritual. I want to debrief you on the foundation you need, kind of like you get your assignment in Mission Impossible. You listen to that little tape recording that self-destructs. Well, I hope the device you're listening on does not self-destruct, but it's kind of like that. It's Mission Impossible. I mean, how do you actually do it? If you really know what you're doing, you're on the wrong track. Yeah, there's a very tentative quality to each and every ritual, kind of an I don't know really what I'm doing, but here we go, because this is what's happening. As a creator of ritual and ceremony, how can you look at the world in such a way that can help make this happen? I want you to have some understanding of how to make a ritual in a way that works for you and the people that you're with to help everyone come into the present moment. And that's what I want to talk about today. Hello and welcome to the 10 Crutches podcast. My name is David. I'm glad you're here. Of course, there are many, 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 many ways to do ritual, many ways to think about it. This is just my take. I hope it's helpful to you, and I hope you can add it to whatever you already know. One thing to know about me is that I use the words ceremony and ritual pretty much interchangeably. Others don't, but I do. Not that big a deal, just want you to know. I also want to point out at least a couple of resources. I will put these in the show notes. The work of philosopher Byung-Chul Han. He has a book, The Disappearance of Rituals, A Topology of the Present. He's really wonderful, and there's a great episode of Philosophize This, number 189. You can hear more about Han's very important work and hopefully be inspired to read it yourself. Also, the work of death doula and teacher Sarah Kerr. She's a really wonderful resource about ritual. It's my sense that ritual is in our DNA. It's in our blood. If our ancestors knew about ritual, then we know it as well, even if it's forgotten at some particular moment. Even when it's forgotten or suppressed in a particular culture, we all know what ritual is. And that's why we can recognize it and enter into it so easily. In my approach, there are three parts to any ritual. They are incredibly easy to remember. Number one, entering the ritual. Number two, being in the ritual. I'm sure you can guess what number three is. Number three, leaving the ritual. I think you have to admit, these are pretty gosh darn simple. And the reason I think it's important to make this explicit is because this simple framework, having this framework in your mind, gives you a map for what you're doing. It gives you a map for understanding where you are in the ritual at any given moment, how to move, when to move. And because the map is so simple, because there's just these three parts, entering, being in, leaving, because it's so simple, you can take this very complicated activity and move into it more easily. Just another thing to mention near the beginning is that the more you can cultivate and trust your intuition, the deeper you will be able to go into ritual. I think it's episode 32. I will talk directly about intuition and how to cultivate it, how to trust it. But for now, since the focus is on ritual, I will simply say, when you are planning a ceremony, bring your intuition. So before we look in more detail at our very simple map of 1, 2, 3, let's get an overview of the whole territory. Not really so much why we would go into the ritual space. That was part one. But what is the ritual space? What is this territory? What is this map of? What are we doing? What makes a ritual into a ritual is that it takes place in a non-ordinary space. We all know what it's like to be in an ordinary space. We have our routines. You wake up in the morning, you pee, you brush your teeth, you get the kids ready for school, you go to work, whatever. You get the idea. There's an ordinary life most people live most of the time, and it's ordinary. It's normal. It's just simply what happens. It's where your normal consciousness lands most of the time. When I say a non-ordinary space, I'm trying to point to some way of creating for yourself and for anyone who will join you in your ritual, some way of creating something folks can recognize as not ordinary. That's all. It's not something that happens every day. Most people will not be able to access this state themselves unless they're very regular meditators, unless they take some drugs, study ritual. So you have to have a lot of practice with trying to come into the present to really have some understanding of this non-ordinary space. Non-ordinary space takes place in the same place that ordinary space happens. It's just a way of talking about shifting our consciousness a little bit so that it isn't, so that we're not quite stuck where we're usually stuck. What makes it non-ordinary is that there's something happening that wakes people up. It signals them to let go of their normal mode of being in the present, which is often very cloudy. Non-ordinary moments are about clearing up the clouds a little bit. This is often called a liminal space. We can call it the ceremonial space, the ritual space, non-ordinary space, whatever. A liminal space is neither here nor there. Or maybe it's both here and there. Liminal comes from the Latin word for threshold. When you enter a house, you step over the threshold. It usually happens quite quickly. You're outside the house. The door opens, you step inside, then you're inside. It's hardly ever noticed, this stepping over the threshold. So you can take this idea of crossing the threshold when you go into your house. You can take the idea and use it as a metaphor to understand how I'm thinking about ceremony. But instead of entering a house, let's imagine one of those kind of like a dream door, one of those surrealistic doors sometimes in a movie that show up in the middle of a field, somewhere like maybe there's some fog around it, you know, something like that. And this door that's in the middle of nowhere, if you open the door, you don't see straight through the door to the rest of the field. You see it's black, maybe it's empty space inside. Now, this is our imagination, after all. This is our metaphor. This is our intuition. So maybe there's a bright light shining somewhere deep inside. Maybe there's a special room. Whatever works for you. But this isn't the ordinary field where the door happens to be in. What I'm saying is that the ritual work is done on the other side of that door. That magical, surrealistic, that door. You open that door. That's where the ritual is going to be taking place. Your job as the ritual creator is to work with the people there as someone who gets them into that liminal space, gets them through that door. You don't have to mention any of this to them. You don't say, let's all pretend we're in the middle of a field. No. You don't have to tell them anything about what you're doing. This is just for you to understand what you are doing. It's not about how to do it. We're going to get to that later. Metaphorically, as the leader of a ceremony, when you are planning this ritual, you can imagine you're standing in the field with that special door. You need to open the door and lead them. And by using your intuition, by opening the door in your mind as you're planning this ritual, you could find out maybe some wonderful visions, some wonderful things that might be included. But your job is going to be to lead them from outside into the space that's inside the door. You're going to help them over the threshold into that unknown ritual space. You're going to lead them across the threshold. That's the first part of the map. That's entering ceremony, entering the ritual. And then you're in the space. That's where you do the ceremony. That's the second part. And then, of course, you need to return everyone and yourself back outside the door, back over the threshold, back into the middle of the field. So that's the means back into your life, the regular life, the ordinary life. And then that's when the ceremony ends, when everybody's been restored, kind of almost like when the hypnotist says, I'm going to snap my fingers and you wake up. It's not quite like that, but that's the kind of the thing. You're leading people back from this non-ordinary state back to where they can take it from there. That's now they get to live the rest of their life. So now we're ready to look a little more closely at the map itself. Let's take these three stages of ritual one at a time. Number one, entering the ritual. Ask people to put away their phones, shut them off, get their little buzzing machines out of their pockets, take your wristwatches off, get off the clock, off the calendar, get into the eternity of the moment, get outside of time. This is the intention. You may decide to make that explicit or not, but the essential characteristic of the liminal space that we're headed toward, the essential characteristic is that it does not occur inside the usual notions of what people have as time. The clock time doesn't matter inside the liminal space. The space that you are in, this the ritual space, you want it to expand beyond the walls of the particular room you are using. You're aware of the limitlessness of space and time. In fact, the very next episode of this podcast, number 23, is going to be about the difference between eternity and forever. In accessing liminal space, you do your best to bring everyone to eternity and to stay away from forever. When you're talking about leading a ceremony, you're talking about what's often called holding space. You're holding space for the ceremony. But what can this, what can it possibly mean? Holding space. Well, that's a very confusing choice of words. What I take it to mean is you're the one who's aware of the eternity of the moment. Through your training, through your effort, through your awareness, through your intuition, you know there's more than just the calendar time, the clock time. That's a human thing. What you're aware of is the time that all the universe shares. We're all sharing time together. We're all flowing through time together. Rituals take place within that flow. That's why you put all these time-keeping devices away. You're holding space. It's a way of saying you're holding eternity. And stepping over the threshold, using our weird door in the field analogy, this is the part at the beginning, this number one part. This is where we're standing outside the door and the door is closed. This is how doors usually are. That's why we have doors. We need to ring the doorbell. We are knocking at the door. The knocking is you, as the leader, making it clear to you and to everyone and to the rest of the universe, because once you're outside of time, to some extent, the rest of the universe is participating with you. I mean, of course, it's always participating with you, whether you're in your dream of time or not. But this is making it clear to everyone, including yourself. So how do you do this? This is where, again, you need to use your intuition. This is where you trust your inspiration. If you're really, really blank, if you really don't have anything, check out videos, websites, etc. Much of how you, quote, knock on the door will depend on what is the ritual for, who are the people joining you, where are they culturally, etc., etc. Some of the things you can do are ringing a bell. You can say, I'm going to ring a bell 3 times and we're all going to settle in and begin the ceremony that way. You can light a candle. You can light sticks of incense. You can have each person who's present come and light a different candle. You can smudge the room. You can get all new agey and woo-woo or not. It depends on the people who you are doing this with or doing this for. You might just simply say, we are going to start the ritual in a moment. So let's stand here quietly, breathing in and out. And now let's place our hands over our hearts. It could be anything. Let's touch our elbows together. I don't know if you're in a group that might find that helpful. I'm saying that you, as the creator and leader of the ritual, you have a map in your head. You use this map to move the people, even though nobody's really going anywhere. You're doing something to acknowledge that the moment is changing. The moment is changing from not being in a ritual to being in a ritual. You plan for a beginning that is, quote, opening the door. So then we are ready together to step over the threshold and into some other kind of space than the one we normally live in. It's not like you're going to see colors or your hand's going to have flashers if you pass it in front of your face. I do recommend incense, though, because then the sense of smell is involved and candles so people can have the light entering their eyes, bells for the ears, hands touching each other's hearts or your own hearts or each holding hands. Get as many of the senses involved as possible. We let people know we are starting. We let them know we are getting closer to being in. And when you are in, part 2, being in the ritual. Once you are there in the liminal space, once you have reminded yourself of the eternity of the moment and helped everyone as best as you can to access it, and once again, you may or may not be mentioning this directly. Once you are there, that's when you perform whatever the ceremony is. You may even be alone. You can do a ritual alone for sure. You have led people to a liminal space. You are now over the threshold. And so now you unfold what has been planned. The reason you plan ahead is because you need to be prepared to do whatever symbolic things you've decided on that are going to carry out the mission of the ritual. Remember, you're trying to make the inside match the outside. That's from part 1. I talked about that. You need a way to slow things down. You have to leave space for people to match the inside and the outside, for people to catch up in their bodies, in their souls, their spirits, their minds. It has to catch up with what's actually happening. So this moment of stepping outside of time is like in the rush of ordinary time. Things just pass by. So you need space for people to say things to each other or whatever. People can write things on a piece of paper, throw them into the fire. You can light candles, blow them out, leave them burning. Use the 4 elements to convey your message. Again, your intuition will have ideas that are going to come as little flashes, little visions of inspiration. Pay attention when you are planning ritual. Pay attention to your messages. It's like listening to your voicemail. So I do apologize if I mix metaphors too much, too often. I love the door out in the field metaphor, but it's not often you have a door out in the field of a foggy field and you open it up and there's like, that's really for your imagination. But every day, we do cross thresholds. And I think it's worthwhile to consider in slow motion. What is this crossing a threshold? You have 2 feet outside the door on one side of a door, and the door is now open. So 1 foot steps forward. If you're going really slow motion, 1 foot is coming off the ground, stepping forward, and moving over the threshold. The foot that's entering the new space needs to touch down on the new space while the other foot is still in the old space. And then, that's only then, you come out of the old space. Your foot, the other foot lifts up out of the old space and then enters along with the rest of you into the new space. And so what I would say is ritual in that sense. And just, you think about this sometimes, you're just coming into your house. If you think about it, think about what that means. Make a little ritual of coming into your house. You're outside, and then the ritual is just simply picking up 1 foot and slowly putting it inside. And then what is that? Are you entering the ritual as you're putting it over? And then maybe the ritual is when the foot touches down, and then you bring up the other foot that's leaving the ritual, and then you're coming in. Now you're in the house. So then just shut the door, go on your way. But you can become aware of the ritual of each and every little moment. So I believe our very human, our very DNA-encoded ability to enter ritual space together, this ability to perform ritual together, I think we yearn for this. Part of any general feeling in society of feeling lost, disoriented during these times, powerless, hopeless, part of it, I believe, is the lack of ritual in our lives. What matters is that you are leading people towards some space that's outside of the normal way we keep track of things. And we do this because we need ceremony to bring us into a present moment and let our bodies and minds fully acknowledge whatever the thing is that's happening. It's happening inside of us, and it's happening outside of us. And in a ceremony, it happens to us together. In a very powerful way, we can be present together with others in community. Commune. Community. Commune means to share. Number 3, leaving the ritual. So now it's done. You've completed the ceremony. It's all over. Both feet have landed on the other side of the threshold. The room inside the door of the door that's in the middle of the foggy field, you've done what you needed to do. You have entered the liminal space, which is no small thing. You have performed your ritual in that liminal space, and now you need a way to leave. You don't just stop all of a sudden, clap your hand. Hey, everybody, we're just here. Pick up your phones, check your emails, and we're back in the world. You know, no. You lead people gently back to the ordinary reality of wherever they're at, and you let them know what the signal is going to be for the end of the ceremony. I've often used 3 bells, slowly spaced apart, similar to the 3 bells I often use at the beginning. The main thing is that you just kind of ease out of it. It's a gentle and smooth movement. It's not sudden. It's not abrupt. I believe this helps people integrate and maintain what they have seen and experienced. It's kind of like if you're lying very still in bed, very gently coming awake, can help you remember a dream. If you just sit up, leap out of bed, the chances are you're going to forget the dream. Sometimes when a ceremony is over, depending on what's happening, for example, at a wedding. Sometimes you want people to be able to erupt in cheers at the very end of the ritual. So in some wedding ceremonies, you might step on a glass, break a glass, kissing the bride. There's a certain moment where you know that's the end. Everybody can erupt in cheers. At other points, people are deeply mourning. You're at a funeral. You need a way for people to come gently back, holding the truth of the loss and the feelings around the loss. Again, you make your plan, using your intuition and in whatever consultation you need with the people who the ceremony is for. I hope you have found this helpful. I hope it provides some insight for you, some useful tools, some ways of thinking about ritual, and I hope you go out and perform lots of rituals and help our culture. Help us come back. Help us come back to performing more ritual, to valuing rituals, and using our intuition to find a way to do that. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time. Please visit the home of the 10 Crutches podcast at 10crutches.link. That's 10crutches.link. The book that inspired the podcast, a book I wrote called 10 Crutches for Walking in the Present, is available for free download on the website. While you are there, please take advantage of two ways to contact me. You can send me an email, or you can make a voice recording. If you have a great question, I may be able to use it for the podcast. Also on the website, you can visit the archive to hear any published episode and see show notes for any and every show. Thanks so much for listening. And once again, thanks so much for listening. And I won't say it once again. See you next time.